All right, so we're going to talk about the, this Thursday is the 17th day of Tammuz, which is a fast day and starts in 3 weeks. So I like to, in order to analyze what the significance, I like to go in the reverse, as I always like to do, and explore what is the typical modern Orthodox feelings, whether said or not said, make them conscious, analyze them, categorize them, and then move from there. So let's say the typical modern Orthodox person, let's get onto their train and see what they visualize from Shavuos or Tammuz, then to the beginning of the 9 days culminating in Tisha B'Av. Okay, let's walk through that experience, a modern Orthodox vision of that, and let's explore that. Okay? Go ahead. So, go ahead, Lauren. Take us by the hand. Give us the tour.
Well, for starters, they're probably upset that it falls out during the summertime.
Okay, that is the number one thing. The 3 weeks, the Shavuot Tammuz 3 weeks, 9 days thing is a violation. It's an interruption of their summer fun. Flat out. Their conference to be seen. Okay, go to that. Or movies, whatever. Depending on the level of observance, okay, of course, but whatever, there's some sort of impact. So right now, it's an annoying hassle. Okay, good. Start with that. Let's move it up now. Let's analyze within that realm. So you have the Shavuos or Tammuz. What is that experience like?
Dreading it.
Is it dreading it? Well, first of all, then more realistically, I say a good percentage of the modern Orthodox music is not observing it. Okay, so that's the first thing. What's Shavuos B'Tammuz? This is a fast day. Many modern Orthodox people observe two fast days of the year, which are Yom Kippur, Tisha B'Av.
The
Yom Kippur is from the Torah, correct? And Shavuos and the ninth of Av is rabbinic, but it's the most it models after Yom Kippur. It's very severe. I mean, it is the most significant rabbinic fast there is of the whole year. So all the other ones, for many modern Orthodox people, those are minor and thus optional, and only weird, furry people do those.
The other four are rabbinic, right?
All of them are, all other than Yom Kippur, none of them are said in the Torah. So you have, taken through the year, you have the Tzom Gedalia, which is on the third day of Tishrei, right after Rosh Hashanah.
It's probably the least important.
Right. Well, okay.
From the people's standpoint.
Right. No, because they already invested their juice with Rosh Hashanah. Now, right after that, they're done. Now, they already gave a lot of being in the shul for eight, 40 years. They suffered enough.
Right.
Enough suffering.
Right.
This is an act fast.
Right.
Entitlement. Okay. Then you move on to they have a Star of Batavis. It's a very short one. This one during the winter, generally December, January. Then you got. Tinus Esther, prior to anything. And then you have this one, which is Shabbat, the 17th day of Tammuz. Okay. So the first thing is that the first point you'll find that people you have the two categories: people that it's not really bored because it's not a big one, whatever that how something becomes a big one or not is a good question. Then it's like, even if it is, it's like a long, it could be during the summer, it's long. Because it's not over until, let's say, 9:10, 9:11, 9:15, whatever, something like that. So it's a lot long. Okay, let's move into the 3 weeks into the 9 days. What is the 3 weeks like for most people? What people experience about it? Well, it's hot, but that's only the 3 weeks. That's really just because of the summer.
You can't do anything fun.
You can't do anything fun.
Restrictions.
Pure pain. And then you have the approaching of the 9 days. There's the approach of the 9 days. What do people do?
Get a haircut.
Well, you can't get a haircut for the whole 3 weeks. But what are they? But what can't? What are the other customs of the 9 days? You can't have meat and wine. So then people go. People start.
Yeah.
Right. So first of all, beforehand, people start to get a little nervous. They get a little anxious. So they start boning up on there's a fear of deprivation, so they're going to have extra meat. And then, of course, during the popular halachas or not popular, unpopular halachas is during the 9 days you can't go swimming, can't take a long, leisurely bath, can't wear freshly laundered clothing, you know, some people not so careful in that, whatever. So it's like, you know, it's really, really ranking up the annoyingometers, like really, so basically it's a series of irritating violations of my summer fun. No music, okay? And then you have, then you have Tisha B'Av itself. What's that all about? What's the feel on that one?
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
A really dumb question.
Okay.
Why do we have the 3 weeks?
I'm getting to that, but I'm first starting from people's...
Backwards?
I'm starting backwards, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I'm starting from what are people's...
Did I miss that one?
No, we're starting with people's feelings about it.
The reason why people also have feelings towards it is because a lot of people probably don't know why we're doing it.
Okay. That's a true statement.
True. That's why I don't do a lot of things, because I don't know why.
Right. True. So we're going to get...
I don't know why I'm doing it. Why am I doing it?
Okay.
Doesn't mean as much, so you don't do it to the fullest extent that you could...
Exactly.
Do.
Well, that's why, that's what I'm making the case first, because within the our collective community, so I think we're all in agreement that basically from Shavuot Matzah through Tisha B'Av, this is 3 weeks of, also you can't get married, sort of a little annoyance, where there's no parties, you know what I mean, there's no big parties. So anyway, basically, to both people's experience, it's a phenomena of basically an interruption of their summer fun with increasing the amount of annoying inconveniences. You say that most people's de facto feeling about it.
Yes.
Nailed it? Pretty good? Okay.
However, in campus instructional swim twice a day.
Right. And that's very good. That's a very good point. So then, of course, is that then, since people feel that way de facto, then you try, all the people try to create all these different like loopholes to avoid it. So when I was, there's a camp that's no longer called Camp Raleigh. So I used to be Camp Raleigh, which was called a sports camp in a terror environment. So I was, it goes back to the 80s here. So, I mean, it's been with like Lavi and Hillel, they're all the same. You know, each person, of course, says that they're better than the other one. That's the old bias.
Everybody knew that Hillel was the greatest.
That's it. So, well, actually, Seneca would be fine, but...
No.
Seneca is
like the Rolls Royce of camp.
There you go. So what was part of my contract working there in the summertime was that I had to do a seum in the middle of the 9 days. They worked out, everybody who was on Hinuch staff did a seum every night of the week. So we had meat every single night of the week.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was like, chas v'sholom.
You wouldn't even have had nine meat meals?
I think they maintained their heavy meat consumption up. In other words, it wasn't impacted at all because everything was connected to a seum. You can have meat on Wild Shabbos, and then, of course, we're doing a seum. Yeah, of course, I just happened to finish this Masechtas on Tuesday of the 9 days. How fortunate. At 7 o'clock. Just in time for dinner for everybody, for the entire 800 people in the camp. So, you're right. So, therefore, there's all these loopholes about, you know, creating sort of these ways to obviate the pain of, and then, of course, swimming. Yeah, we're now suddenly going to do 3 periods of instructional swim. Mm-hmm. So we all basically have, you know, fun in the pool. All right? So
when I was in Seneca every year, supposedly, I didn't know this because I was only there once and I was a counselor, and my camper's dad would fly in on a helicopter and he would buy meat from, like, some restaurant and bring it and supply it to the entire camp. It was all on him.
Okay.
Ridiculous.
All right. No, there are such stories, all these camps which have some wealthy, you know, or visiting day became a very big visiting day became. Right. So the bottom line is that what Danny said before, I think is accurate. The bottom line is that the 3 weeks and 9 days are poorly understood, and therefore they're just kept because of the. There's a guilt factor. But if you ask somebody, why are you keeping these days? Why? So why aren't you going to... is an unbelievable, you love Eric Clapton. Eric Clapton's coming to the Gardens. You can get tickets. It's in the 9 days. So why don't you go? You know, they said, why can't you go? Say it's the 9 days. So what? Do you have any reasons at all why they do? Can they explain what they're doing at all? What do they give? What do they say? Not something they're trying to tell the Gentile, but we'll even say to anybody. Just their random custom. During 3 weeks during the year, I don't go to concerts. I have a non-concert going time of the year. Do they give any reason? What reason would they give if you ask them? If you poke them?
It's a period of mourning or something.
Yeah, so why are you mourning?
They don't know why to do it. They just were told by mommy and daddy. Then.
They have no reason? They went to 12 years ago, they know nothing?
Why?
They know nothing? They can't say? You might squeeze out because bad things happened to the Jewish people during this time. The two temples were destroyed. You might be able to squeeze a little more out of that. But what's the problem with that?
They can't tell you what significance of them doing it now.
Right, so what? Right, you can't answer the so what problem. Okay? I mean, let's say you can point out that there were, on Shavuot Thomas, five bad things happened, and on Tisha B'Av, another five bad things happened to the Jewish people, historically. Okay, let's say you say that's true. So what? I'm living in America, 2009. Things are good. That's the problem they can't solve. They're stuck. Even if they can give you a reason that bad things happen, therefore we have national mourning, but why are you still mourning? In other words, for a parent, you're only in mourning for a year. So the temple was destroyed 2,000 years ago. Get over it. Get over it. Right? That would be a good question, right? They can't answer that question. What do you say? I said, you ask them that. What would they say? That was then, this is now.
Remembering.
Okay, but it's all remembering. I still want to go to the Clapton concert because I got some great tickets.
Well, because it's kind of in the modern day way of you kind of feeling like sadness and kind of like not enjoying yourself because
Why?
Back in the day, because they were
miserable.
They were going through something as well.
Okay.
I mean, it's clearly not as extreme, but
okay. Maybe,
you know, somebody missing their Eric Clapton concert is just as bad to some people as,
The entire temple destroyed would be destroyed, right.
There's people that, right. Listen, the Michael Jackson thing was blown out of
proportion. Right. That's an insane thing.
You know, if somebody told me that a soldier was kidnapped in like Iraq or something, or another place, like an American soldier has been, kidnapped.
Abducted, yeah.
And nobody knows about it because Michael Jackson has been just taking over the news. Right. And also, poor Sarah
Fawcett. She died the same day.
She died the same day. You probably knew about it once.
No, she got some time. She got some air time.
Okay.
And also, and this man died like 2 days earlier or whatever. Here's Johnny. Right, but he got pushed up. Anyway, right. So, all that being the case. All right, so let's see if we can get there to add some meaning to this whole activity, put into a modern day perspective. So, so interesting.
Did we do this last year? This topic.
All right. So I saw a recent article in the Wall Street Journal, and our article brought out this person was a intelligence analyst, and he had access to pretty insider information. And he was identifying, listing all the things that Israel has done in the last, let's say, couple of years to stem their various threats in the region. Some were well known and some were not known. What was well known was, for example, that they sent in a team of, the Israeli equivalent of Navy SEALs / Green Berets guys. They dropped them into Syria and they had wiped out your entire nuclear reactor program. Flattened it. Done. So that was a big threat. They also had got teams into Iran and various of the facilities that are developing, you know, nuclear technology, they're able to blow up some stuff and, you know, try to stem the progress. You know, and then you have stuff of, you know, blocking, they had a very, there were weapons being, were on its way to Gaza. A whole major convoy, and they were already, they were able to wipe it out, like in the Sudan or in Northern Africa. Unbelievable, really cool.
Right, I mean, Rex, they say that, because their thing is like
Ishmael
was like the big guy, right?
Let me tell you, well, the Quran made Ishmael the chief child of Abraham.
Right, so.
In the Quran, they rewrote certain parts of the Torah to make Ishmael the main figure. The binding of Yitzchak is not the binding of Yitzchak, but the binding of Ishmael. They made him the main character. Okay, very important, yes?
No, so I mean, so, something like, so we made their core differences in the, leading back to the forefathers and their children, which is basically what we hold, and it's not possible that, you know, that we could both be right. I mean, we're in direct conflict with what they hold, so therefore they have to remove the Jews to get rid of this difference of opinion. Because we hold that what they're saying is not valid.
Right. And, well, how did Muhammad, the founder of Islam, how did he call the Jewish people?
How did he call
them? Well, he had a term for it. He quoted a famous, he coined an important frame, name of the Jews. The Jews are the people of the book. Right. In other words, he saw them as intellectuals. Now, Muhammad himself was illiterate. His wife, Fatima, wrote the Quran. I think he's obviously a very intelligent person. You can't launch a religion and be an idiot. But himself was illiterate. And his wife, Fatima, she was very, she was, you know, she was literate. She could write. They crafted the Quran. So the bottom line is that what they sense is that the Jewish people, in other words, it's the wisdom of the Torah is really blocking their opportunity to make them feel that they are truly the chosen one. In other words, the Jews represent the Torah. The Torah and its approach to life really does not allow them to fully enjoy the fact that they feel it as being chosen. Avram picked Ishmael. He did not pick Isaac. That bothers them. And they sense that that's why they have to be, they go in a very hysterical, if you ever go to see videos online, YouTube, memory, translate many of these speeches of various clerics. And they talk about the Jews like in a very similar to the way that the Nazis did. That the Jews are, you know, they're controlling all the businesses and they're responsible for all the, every negative thing in the universe is because of Jews' fault. I mean, they have sort of like this hysterical picturing of the whole situation. And of course, they deny the Holocaust, and they have to undo any vestige of legitimacy. They have to undo. You know what I'm saying? So they're profoundly irrational in that way. I mean, they will ignore the entire historical record to undo the legitimacy of anything Jewish. So much so that Arafat, when he went to King Camp David, and he sat down with Bill Clinton and Ehud Barak, and who was willing to give up to 98% of the West Bank, or over 90%, and Arafat did not give him that, but made one clean to everybody. King Solomon never had a temple on the Temple Mount. There was never a Jewish. That was his position. There never was a Jewish vestige there. Now, why is he saying that? To what, you know, Bill Clinton, who's a Christian, you know, that's also, the temple being historical reality is very much focused on the New Testament as well. You know, I mean, the Second Temple has a lot of airtime in the Second Temple in the New Testament. So he went crazy at him. But why do he want to do that? So why did Arafat want to maintain that there never was a temple, first or second, on the Temple Mount?
contradiction principle.
Right. The bottom line is the Jew, and by extension, his way of life, his chachma approach undermines their entire, you know, political or religious aspiration. So therefore, they have to actually just they can't deal with it, you know, intellectually straight up. So what they have to do, deny the very premises. Otherwise, there never was a temple. You know what I mean? Isaac was never that special. It was Ishmael. They had to literally rewrite the narrative. So the bottom line is like this. So to put into full circle, the short answer is like this. So what if you read through the parsha of Chukotai at the end of Vayikra, and again in Kitavo in Devarim, you have the idea of the Tocha, God's rebuke of the Jewish people, which basically says that the Jewish people are going to ignore the punishments that Hashem has sent the Jewish people as a nation. There will be greater intensification of that. The Jewish people, part of the punishments is that we are in exile. So fundamentally, this time of the year, the 3 weeks, we take the time where all these calamities happen to the Jewish people, whether it be the destruction of the temples, whether it be the siege of Jerusalem, whether it be the decree of the spies, all of which focus our attention on one reality, is that we as a Jewish people have missed our mark as a nation. And we reflect upon we don't look at our report card every day, because that would be so depressing, we wouldn't be able to function. But at least once a year, Tisha B'Av, and then the 3 weeks by an extension, we focus on the reality that we as a Jewish people are in a state of punishment. We're not living in Israel with full sovereignty. And the threats of the Jewish people are ever-present, as we say in the Seder, in every generation they stand up to destroy us. So therefore we recognize that that's the Jewish people's existence is based upon God's divine providence. And if these threats are allowed to happen, it's because we as Jewish people, as a nation, have failed. And that's why ultimately the two fast days really is a call for tshuva of a national kind. Because really these threats to our existence are emerging from the fact that the Jewish people have missed the mark. And that's why a person doesn't want to think about that. A person wants to think, you know, wants to maintain, I would call a, you know, especially in the summertime, a club med mentality, like, you know, it's a party. And that's why it's very annoying. I'm having a party, and it's sort of like this thing is sort of invading my party. I got my tunes on. You know, the steaks are sizzling on the grill there. The beers are poking out of the ice, right? And it's like it's starting to rain. You know what I mean? What's up with that? Uncool. So the truth is, there's an additional factor is that the if you think into the implications of what the 3 weeks really mean, it's really not pleasant. That's why it can't be 24/7. We can't handle it. As Jack Nicholson said, you know the truth. Can handle the truth. So we focus short times to focus on that, so it would be hopefully productive to do tshuva. That's what the 3 weeks really about. And these things happen on very short concern. Five events happen on the Shavuot Batamah, and five events happen on Tisha B'Av is there to point out that the problem that we had that caused the destruction of the temples and other subsequent events since then have not been solved. So, as the Gemara says, any generation that the Beis HaMikdash has not been rebuilt as if it was destroyed in that generation, which means that we're no better than them, because if we were better, qualitatively, we'd have a different outcome. So that's really the message of the 3 weeks, 9 days, Tisha B'Av. Now the way that it's halachically designed, it's like a death. When you have a death, let's say of a parent, you have the death. Then you have the shiva. Then, after the shiva is over, you have the first week. Then the subsequent 3 weeks after that is Shloshim, the first month. After the first month, then you have the 12-month period of mourning. So you have three levels of mourning. Shiva being the most intense, Shloshim being less intense, and then for parents, the 12-month period. Here we do it in reverse. We go from the three-week period models the 12-month period. A similar, we don't have parties, you know what I'm saying? It has certain features of the same thing as a person observing a 12-month period of availment. Then you have the 9 days, or which, according to the, or what used to be the week of Tisha B'Av, which is what Sfaradim observe. You have Shloshim, like you're in the 30-day period. You don't get it, you know, you don't take a warm, comfortable bath. You don't wear freshly laundered clothes. Okay, we add an additional one of the not eating meat or wine is really an extension. Then you have Tisha B'Av itself. Tisha B'Av itself, we don't sit on, we sit on the floor. We're like a Avelim who are observing a 7-day in the Shiva period. So really, it's Avelis in reverse. From less intense to the epicenter, which is the most intense, which is Tisha B'Av itself. Which is that we're all Avelim of Shiva. And that's why a guy who's sitting Shiva can go to shul, because we're all sitting Shiva, as it were. For the reality of the, not for the building, the destruction of the building, but the loss of the relationship of Hashem to the Jewish people. The loss of the Shechin, if you will. And that's really what's going on here, is that the Jewish people, there's a wall between us and Hashem, and that without us making some systemic breakthroughs, if that wall exists, we are going to be open to catastrophic problems. Whether it be, Hamas on the east, on the west, or, you know, Hezbollah on the north, or, Iran, in a looming distance, and anti-Semitism, worldwide. It's really all forecasted in the Nevi'im and in the Chumash itself. And that's really the essence of the thing, is really to put into one sense, the 3 weeks period is a time for us to realize where do we stand as a nation relative to Hashem. Are we close or are we far? Are we, instead of warmth and love and absolute protection, are we in a distant zone right now and we're open to catastrophic problems occurring to us? And that's really what we have to consider about. And that's really what the 3 weeks is really about. Each person to their own level. A person has to be able to be, who can to think about it to the extent they can think about it. And that's, and all these levels are really tools to interrupt the normal everyday lifestyle. Because if you're in a normal framework, you're not going to think about the things at all. So they're designed to be an interruption of the normal course of events. Life as usual. And that's what the whole time is designed for. In a nutshell. So. Any questions? On that somber note, we will end.